This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Rebecca Roberts. Whether she's exploring a medical culture clash in The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down, or negotiating the fraught terrain of merging her books with her husband's in Ex Libris, Anne Fadiman clearly has a big crush on the English language. She also has a big crush on romantic essayist Charles Lamb, as we discover in her new book, At Large and At Small, which is coming out next week. Anne Fadiman joins us now from Amherst, Massachusetts. Welcome.
It's good to be with you, Rebecca.
So why the familiar essay? Explain a little bit about the appeal of this form to you.
Well, the familiar essay is a subset of the personal essay, but not quite as personal as the personal essay that we know in the 21st century. The personal essay in which the writer essentially regurgitates his innards onto the page and doesn't talk about anything but himself. In the early 19th century, essayists like Charles Lamb and William Hazlitt wrote what they called familiar essays that were about them, but also about a subject. That is, Lamb, for example, wrote about tailors and drunkards and annoying relatives, familiar subjects that he knew well and that his readers knew well, too.
Your topics range from ice cream to Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Was there anything you left out that you decided was just too obscure or esoteric?
Well, a lot of the topics are pretty esoteric, but they were familiar to me, and therefore I wanted to spend several weeks thinking and writing about them. The advantage of writing an essay that's partly about yourself and partly not about yourself is that you get your share of solipsism, but you also get to do research. For example, when I was writing about coffee, I got to drink an enormous amount of coffee, but I also got to read an enormous amount about coffee. I'd always been curious about the influence of the English coffee house on 17th century literature. I'd always been curious about the history and the chemistry of coffee. I wanted to read about Balzac's coffee addiction. And knowing that I was going to write an essay about coffee enabled me to spend 2 or 3 weeks doing nothing but drinking coffee, writing about coffee, and reading about coffee.
You clearly admire people like Charles Lamb and Coleridge, but you also make a pretty compelling argument that the canon is not a closed door, it's evolving. So in that light, do you think blogging is a form of familiar essay?
I don't know whether it's a form of familiar essay, but I do think that it's an interesting literary genre. There are a lot of terrible blogs because, of course, they don't go through the usual filters. It's sort of like eating your coffee grounds raw, as Balzac often did, rather than filtering them into a somewhat more refined brew. But many bloggers write beautifully, and there, of course, may be some advantages in not being filtered through the editing process. The hallmark of the familiar essay is that it is autobiographical, but it's also about the world. A lot of bloggers I read do just one or just the other and don't combine the two.
You're teaching nonfiction writing at Yale now?
Yes.
In The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down, you clearly became enormously involved with that Hmong family. It clearly was a story that spoke to you on a personal level. Would you encourage that level of attachment in your students?
If a student insisted on that level of attachment, I wouldn't discourage it. That would be like discouraging someone from falling in love. On the other hand, it's incredibly easy to get burned out if you become that attached. Also, I spent 8 years on that book, and I would never encourage a student to be so slow or so obsessed, because he or she would probably starve before publication.
In reading the reviews of, not the reviews from official reviewers, but from regular people on websites of Ex Libris, a lot of people mentioned that you felt like a good friend, that if you lived closer, they were sure you'd be their best friend. How much of what we feel like we know of you in your writing is you, and how much of it is sort of a person you are trying to portray?
Well, first, let me say that that's a perfect description of the familiar essayist. The familiar essayist, for example, in the 19th century, didn't write just on familiar subjects. He wrote as if he were familiar with the reader. Instead of lecturing to a giant audience of 1,000, he wrote as if he was sitting in his parlor in the evening, maybe smoking a pipe, wearing a pair of slippers, and talking to his best friend. So you've perfectly described the writer-reader relationship in a familiar essay. The self that I portray, I think, was slightly caricatured in Ex Libris. That is, the character that I was in Ex Libris is me, recognizably me, but a kind of a heightened me, just as a caricaturist will draw someone who has a somewhat large nose with a really, really large nose, and thus make that person maybe even more recognizable than a realistic illustrator could. I think I'm slightly less caricatured in At Large and At Small because the essays are a bit longer. Some of them are a bit more serious and the subjects are more varied.
Writing about the joys of reading aloud, you said, when you read silently, only the writer performs. When you read aloud, the performance is collaborative. And I realize that reading your own writing doesn't quite count as collaboration, but would you read something for us?
Sure. Let me read a passage from an essay on moving. This passage is about how our extremely sophisticated black-clad real estate agent, Paolo, helped us prepare our Soho loft to be seen by prospective tenants. We banished the animals to Henry's bedroom, expunged our personal effects, spread a patchwork quilt on the sofa, replaced the Revereware tea kettle with an imported red enamel coffee pot you couldn't pick up without a potholder, replaced the potholder, repainted the kitchen cabinet, scrubbed the windows, mopped the floors, rolled out a Persian rug the children weren't allowed to walk on, moved 9 bags of toys to our neighbor's loft, and propped the pillows vertically on our bed, which meant that all the comfortable ones, the soft, saggy blobs you could bury your cheek in, were extradited to the closet. It could have been worse. If we'd been selling the loft instead of just renting it, we might have been tempted to hire a fluffer. Fluffer is a term borrowed from pornographic filmmaking. He or she gets the male star ready for the camera. In the housing market, the fluffer, also known as a stager, induces a temporary state of real estate tumescence by removing much of what the client owns and replacing it from a private warehouse of props with new furniture, carpets, plants, paintings, towels, sheets, shower curtains, throw pillows, lampshades, ice buckets, breakfast trays, and Scrabble sets.
Ann Fadiman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's been a pleasure.
Ann Fadiman's book of familiar essays is called At Large and At Small. It's out next week. You can hear more of Fadiman's reading and read an excerpt from her essay on moving at npr.org.